from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Austerity is a cruel pill to swallow. On Sunday, citizens in France and Greece cast their ballots and said, enough. François Hollande, the anti-austerity socialist, defeated Nicolas Sarkozy to become the next president of France. In Greece, the big political parties that agreed to huge spending cuts were voted down. But the Eurozone economic crisis is still grim. Spain's at 25% unemployment. Italy's looking shaky. Germany, the bedrock and big voice for austerity, is watching. This hour on Point, the pain of austerity and pushback politics in Europe. You can join the conversation. What do you see playing out in Europe's drama? What can, should Americans learn? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Paris is Dominique Moisy. He is co-founder and senior advisor at the French Institute of International Affairs, author of The Geopolitics of Emotion, How Cultures of Fear, Humiliation, and Hope are Reshaping the World, a big French thinker. Dominique Moisy, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And with us from Washington, Scheherazade Rahman, professor of international finance at George Washington University, director of the European Union Research Center there, a very sharp observer of Europe's dilemma. Scheherazade Rahman, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you, Tom.
Scheherazade, first to you. Just how big a deal are these two elections in the sweep of struggle that we've seen Europe in the midst of now ever since the crisis hit?
I think they're very telling, but they're no surprise. All I have to say is thank God the French elections were on so that no one was really paying attention to Greece until a few days later. I think what's happened is you've seen the pushback against austerity and anti-incumbent mood all over Europe, and this is playing itself out in Italy. It's played itself out in France and Greece. And I think that the current French president has a very, very difficult balancing act because he ran on the anti-austerity platform, but very, very soon he's going to visit Angela Merkel and he's going to have to make a decision on Greece, whether they hold Greece's feet to the fire and make them either carry out the austerity programs of cut off aid, or which is probably what he's going to do. He's going to stand on the side of the Germans and the IMF. But that's going to be a big slap in the face for everybody who voted for him. And so he's in this horrible dilemma where very quickly in his presidency, he has to show his colors in terms of the reality of the markets.
That, of course, is not the message that he's been giving in the first days after the vote here. I mean, here he was talking in his victory speech in Paris. This was on Sunday, coming out strong against austerity. François Hollande.
In all the European capitals, beyond the leaders and the heads of government, the people are looking to us. Thanks to our movement, they hope to be finished with these destructive austerity measures.
And yes, the message from Germany, the Chancellor there, Angela Merkel, right away saying, hey, we are not interested in renegotiating everything here.
We in Germany are of the opinion, and that includes myself personally, that the stability pact cannot be renegotiated. I think the pact is right.
Dominique Moisy in Paris, before we get into all the complications of what happens next, can you just share with us what is it about what's happened with the French economy, spending, austerity, that drove so many French voters to this anti-austerity vote?
Well, I think there is a specificity in the French case. People voted against Sarkozy as a person. It was a message of rejection of a man, and not only rejection of austerity. People voted for Hollande not because he was promising to end austerity, but because he was not Nicolas Sarkozy. So it's something different. And I felt the atmosphere in Paris, right after the election of the second socialist president of France. It had nothing to do with 1981. There was a very subdued serenity, the feeling that, oh well, or I would say mixture of serenity and gravity. Nothing has changed. We have a different president, but we know the margin of maneuvering is going to be very, very slim. So in a way, Scheherazade is absolutely right. The first thing François Hollande will have to do will be to reassure his opponents and to frustrate his supporters.
So you're saying they were really voting against Sarkozy because he had come to represent what in this cauldron of economic pressure of the last few years?
Well, because of his style of governing. It was, this election was not about policies. It was about the personal style of the two opponents. In a way, Sarkozy was rejected because he didn't respect the state enough. He didn't. He desacralized the function of a presidency. So there was a Gaullist rejection of the man who was in the seat of de Gaulle, but who was so different from de Gaulle. Then there was an ethical rejection of a man who has been flirting with the extreme right and who lost, as a result of that, the ethical humanistic center. So to some extent, to link the defeat of Sarkozy with the rejection of austerity is only half true. There was something much, much more personal. People simply could not stand to see him for five more years on their television screen.
No doubt. You are correct in many ways. At the same time, we've all listened and we've heard Hollande, the next president, talking a lot about austerity. If I may, here's another bit of tape from Sunday. And this was another speech, a kind of victory speech, from his hometown of Toul in France.
Aujourd'hui même. From today, I'm responsible for the future of France, and I'm only too aware that the rest of Europe is watching us. When the results were announced, I'm sure many people across Europe heaved a sigh of relief, knowing that austerity is no longer a foregone conclusion.
Austerity no longer a foregone conclusion. Dominique Moisy, what about that message on the day of his victory?
Do you think that François Hollande is going to take the lead of a thousand alliance against Germany, you are wrong. What he will do is going to be to find a compromise with Angela Merkel. And she's a very pragmatic politician. They know, both of them, that Europe needs some kind of restored Franco-German leadership, with, of course, Germany as the senior partner and France a little bit more as the junior partner. Mm-hmm. But the idea that there will be, on the one hand, the Europe of growth in the south and the Europe of austerity in the north behind Germany does not correspond to the reality. What Hollande is saying, which a lot of people are agreeing, in fact, Paul Krugman in the United States being one of the foremost exponent of that, is that austerity alone will lead nowhere except to populist outbursts in the streets of countries like Greece, and that you need to give hope and you need to add to austerity an element of growth with, of course, very different meaning for it. In the mind of François Hollande, growth means the role of the state, a kind of new deal, or in the mind of Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank. But we are looking for a compromise, not for a clash between two different visions.
Sherazad, take us further south to Greece, where, to my eye, it looks more like looking for a clash. Well, there is a clash. What exactly happened in Greece, Sherazad?
Well, it's pretty chaotic. The two main parties, the POSOK and the New Democracy, which were the unity government, basically failed to get a majority. They have about a third of the votes. That means they have to hook up with the myriad of different, you know, smaller, more extremist parties. And it looks like, you know, the radical left coalition is going to make some waves here. There is no clarity right now if they can even form a government. There might even be elections coming down the road in June. But the message is clear that they want to roll back on some of the austerity programs and renege on some of the agreements on the bailout. And again, this puts, you know, Germany's pretty clear on this, and so is the IMF, that if you do so in June, we simply will not give you more money. And if that happens, the Greek government will run out of money within a few months. And then, you know, the chaos starts all over again. And I think this is where Hollande comes in. And if I might just add to Dominique, Dominique's right. Sarkozy alienated pretty much everyone. And Hollande came in as this ordinary guy who was normal and people can relate to him. But underlying this, as you have mentioned, you know, there is a movement against and pushback against austerity of all the incumbents all over Europe. And don't forget, you know, the conservatives have been in power for 17 years in France. And what is happening in France is reflective of a lot of Western countries where the belief was, and that's what the conservatives all over the West have been saying, that if you work hard, you will get wealthy and you will do well. Mm. That is no longer true, nor is it a given. And people can sense that. And so there's more of a leaning towards the government stepping in and helping out. And that sense, I think, is there. I think the danger is that we are now talking about France's deteriorating national accounts, and the markets are talking about France drifting away from the core, which is Germany and the Nordic countries, and we're all of a sudden talking about it with Spain and Italy. I think that is an extremely dangerous development.
French,
if that happens.
Drift. We'll look at that Greek no. Scheherazade Rahman in Washington, please stand by. It's great to have you with us. And Dominique Moisy in Paris. When we come back, we'll go to Berlin for a little German perspective on what's going on here. We're talking about Europe's pushback politics this hour. Voters in France and Greece saying enough. And what comes now? Listeners, you can join us. Are you following what's going on in Europe? Do you see European voters throwing up their hands saying no more to austerity, to Sarkozy? Are you sympathetic when you see their unemployment rates, their pensions gone, their lives upside down? 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Europe's pushback politics. Voters in France and Greece on Sunday saying no, no to Nicolas Sarkozy, no to the austerity in Greece, no, says the incoming socialist president of France, to austerity in France. We're looking at what comes next. Here's a little sound from Greece itself. This was after the Sunday elections. Greek conservative leader Antonis Samaras, whose pro-austerity New Democracy Party came in first in national elections but fell far short of governing majority, told voters he's ready to form a new coalition that will work with the rest of Europe, also addressing here the people's big call for change.
We are ready to take the responsibility of forming a government of national salvation, but with two specific aspirations: that the country remain in the euro and the policies of the bailout agreement are amended so that there is growth and relief in Greek society. I understand the rage of the people, but our party will not leave Greece ungoverned.
I understand the rage of the people, he says there. Here, after the Greek elections, German Chancellor again Angela Merkel in a Berlin news conference warned whoever's governing Greece that it needs to uphold its economic commitments.
Es ist natürlich von allergrößter Wichtigkeit, dass die Programme, die wir mit Griechenland vereinbart haben, auch weiter fortgeführt werden, dass der Weg, den Griechenland eingeschlagen hat.
She says it's of the greatest importance that the programs agreed upon with Greece continue and that the path Greece has gone down, though it might be burdensome, has to be continued. Merkel saying now is the time that Greece themselves have to evaluate the results of their elections. Not a whole lot of flexibility right there from the German Chancellor. Dominique Moisy joins us this hour from Paris, author of The Geopolitics of Emotion. He's at the French Institute of International Affairs. Scheherazade Rahman is with us from George Washington University School of International Affairs in Washington, D.C. We'll go in a moment to Berlin. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you sympathetic to what you saw from European voters, French and Greek, this weekend? Do you sympathize with the suck it up Germans, with the give us a break French and Greeks? What should Americans learn from what's going on in Europe? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I want to go right now to Berlin in Germany and Nicholas Kulisch. He's Berlin bureau chief for the New York Times. You can follow him on Twitter at nkulisch, N-K-U-L-I-S-H, on Twitter. Nicholas Kulisch, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What do you see Germans who've got the big purse here making of what they've just witnessed in France and Greece?
Well, I think that they have a lot of understanding for what happened in France, and I think they don't have as much understanding for what happened in Greece, to put it bluntly. I mean, I think that from the German perspective, And that, of course, is a perspective that doesn't see the riot damaged streets of Athens. The Greeks are sort of taking their medicine for mismanagement. Whereas in France, it's a switch from one major party to another.
But Hollande is talking a lot about moving France and Europe away from austerity. Does that just sound like political speech or substantial speech to, let's say, Angela Merkel?
Well, I think that Angela Merkel is obviously concerned and trying to figure out exactly where Hollande stands. But I don't think that anyone believes that he will go as far as he maybe sounds like he would when making his campaign speeches. Merkel knows that she has the markets, the ratings agencies, on her side when it comes to disciplining those who don't follow her prescription.
And so where does that take things here? How much room for maneuver is Germany likely to give the rest of the continent? Does it really have its finger on the controls here? Does it have to loosen up? You've got Hollande talking about growth. Can you have growth and austerity at the same time?
Well, when you say growth, it depends a lot on what you mean. So everybody is claiming to be in favor of growth, and indeed nobody wants to see any of the economies on this continent shrinking. But when the Germans say growth, what they mean is long-term structural reforms to the economy, mostly making it easier to fire people, that also make it easier then to hire people, and where you would see 1, 2, 3 years down the line, increased economic growth. When people on the periphery talk about growth, they mean let's spend money now to try to juice our economies and jolt them back into growing again. And so you'll hear a lot of people agreeing on the headline and disagreeing on the details.
Let's go to our listeners, and we'll take it to Dominique and Scheherazade. John in Fairfield, Iowa. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to praise the votes in France and Greece. I believe that the only way we can get real growth is to put more money back into the economy. And I hope that the rightists in the United States will take a hint from this. All of our best economists, Krugman, Robert Reich, they're all saying that we have to stimulate the economy and even increase taxes on the super rich.
How do you do that in a country like Greece, John, where they're just flat on their back in terms of what happened with government spending?
Well, I don't know. I'm not familiar with so much with what's happening in Europe, but I take this as a move that might cause the United States to consider following it. For example, James K. Galbraith has said that the amount of money in the hands of the people is exactly the amount of money of the national debt. And the national debt is not a problem. This is what is scaring a lot of the rightists, because the national debt can always be increased forever, because the federal bank, the national bank, by law, has to cash American government checks.
Well, true enough, and unless and until, I mean, what Greece saw was the bond market turning its face away, and then it was just plain out of cash. But, John, we take your point, and we'll look at whether there's a climate change here. Let me go to Vincennes, Indiana, and Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm okay. What do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with the past two or three callers. I've taught economics for about 25 years in a high school in rural Indiana, and I really think it's sad that our politics have been hijacked by what I believe is a new name, the moral majority, that have helped lead us into the problems we have. George Bush inherited a surplus budget, which should have voted well, except in, obviously, two wars and an entitlement program, all of which we've borrowed all the money for, and now all of a sudden, after a tech bubble and a housing bubble, now we want to practice Adam Smith economics. We need to go back to Lord Maynard Keynes. We need a stimulus program. The Obama stimulus was much, much too small. And just as a final point, my understanding was the U.S. government borrowed money on 10-year bonds a couple of weeks ago at 2%. That's not even inflation. We should, as the caller said before, we should be building highways, we should be building schools. In Indiana, we are laying off teachers, we are laying off policemen, we are laying off firemen, we are laying off construction workers, and we have a governor who is going to, who has enshrined tax caps in our Constitution, and I think we're in a permanent recession in Indiana, and I'm afraid, I'm glad France and Greece and Spain are finally saying no to the German bankers and the terrible policy of austerity.
Jeff, we've got it. Shahrazad Rahman, let me bring it to you. Is there money in the tank in France, let's say, for growth? When Hollande talks about growth, does that mean stimulus? And is there money for a stimulus in France? Can they do it?
Yeah, you know, and I think Nicholas had it right. It's, you know, what kind of growth are we talking about? And yes, there is money in France. You know, they've got 86% debt to GDP ratio. There's a little room here to maneuver. I think what's at the heart of all of this discussion is crisis management, which is a short-term phenomena of infusing liquidity into the market versus long-term, which are austerity measures. Clearly, common sense dictates that some middle road between the two needs to be taken. In the United States, we did a lot of crisis management, and we have now to take the hard measures of structural reform, which we haven't even begun to do, and we won't until after the elections. And in Europe, they went exactly the opposite way. They took the long-term version of growth, which is all austerity and very little crisis management, 2 years ago when they were supposed to have done it. So the price to pay now is much larger because they only started crisis management last November.
Nicholas Kulish, so do you see room right now? Do you see Merkel saying, yeah, let's have a little stimulus in France and let's get some growth going that way as long as we have a long-term commitment to reining in deficit? Do you see that room for maneuver there?
With an emphasis on the word little, yes, I do. There are a couple things that can be done that will allow Hollande to claim that he's fulfilled his campaign promises, but that won't have as much of an effect on, or in some cases any, on the budget deficit. So, for instance, there's an institution called the European Investment Bank, and they're talking about topping that up with another 10 billion euros that would then allow, it's about $13 billion, and that would allow them to help a little bit with the Spanish banks and to try to get some projects off the ground. There's also billions of dollars of what are called EU structural funds that haven't been spent yet. In some cases, mismanaged countries like Greece have money that they haven't even tapped. In other cases, they haven't tapped it because they don't have the matching funds. So similar to with some American, you know, federal grants and state projects. So you'll see them speeding up those structural fund projects. You'll see them doing a little more with the European Investment Bank, maybe even delaying some of the spending cuts that have been promised. And then you can say, okay, we've done some things for stimulus, but I think a lot of economists would say it'll just be a drop in the bucket compared to the collapses that some of these economies are experiencing.
Dominique Moisy in Paris, we've heard Hollande is looking at new revenues and revenues from higher taxes on the affluent, the rich in France. We've heard up to 70% or something like that. What do you see coming on that front, the revenue part and taxing the rich in France?
Well, here again, I think there will be a medium way. Hollande is a social democrat. He is no leftist. When he spoke of taxing 75% the very rich above 1 million euro per year, it really concerns 3,000 people in France. It sends a negative message economically, but he wanted to send an ethical message, a political message, which is a message of fairness, saying that if you want to reform a country, a social contract must exist, and if the gap between the very rich and the very poor is too big, such a social contract is destroyed. I think what will be the challenge of Hollande will be to find the right way between discouraging the rich and humiliating the poor. And I think he's perfectly aware of that thin road, that thin path that exists for him. But again, France is not Greece. France is not a mismanaged country. It is a country that has means, unlike Greece.
Let's go to Christopher in Charlotte, North Carolina. Christopher, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to make the comment that I'm a young Democrat myself, and I used to think that the the right demonized social programs unjustly. But now that I see that the difficulty that the European Union is having, I'm starting to see where the Republicans are coming from, because I feel that a lot of this austerity has been brought upon by very, very liberal social programs in Greece and France that were good on paper, but just weren't fiscally responsible for the countries that they serviced.
Christopher, let us pick it up. Dominique Mosier, I'll bring that to you. In Paris, did Europe simply outrun its capacity to support social welfare programs here?
Well, I think we did live well beyond our means materially for decades. And what I'm arguing is that we probably lived well below our means, politically, ethically, if not spiritually, for decades. Yes, there is an element of that. The kind of welfare state we've been building and using people to has to be revised. I mean, we can't afford it any longer. But at the same time, this what made us superior. This what made us more human than, in many ways, I would say, the social program in the United States, where before Obama came to power, the situation was atrocious for many U.S. citizens. So we paid a price for, in a way, the human nature of the treatment of the weakest.
So, Sherazade, is there a social ideal collapsing here or collapsed here? Is Hollande promising to resuscitate it? Can he do it?
Well, you know, here's the irony. I think the basic fact is, look, we had a very serious financial crisis, and what this did was expose the fissure of income disparity in the West, period. And people are picking up on this. The irony is, you know, pushing for all these austerity measures and then trying to get jobs going, the only route for Europe, and I'm talking about continental Europe, is to do labor market reform. And this is going to undo the tight social contract that they have had for decades.
Meaning fewer job guarantees?
Absolutely. Labor flexibility to fire. And this is coming. And so in a roundabout way, you know, this is really not the agenda of the socialist, but this is how it's going to probably end up, because this is the only way to create jobs is by revitalizing the private sector.
Is Nicholas in Berlin, do you see Germans here have been described as having a very moralistic view of what's going on? You know, people have been profligate. Now they have to pay the price to get things straightened out again. How deep does that go in the German perspective at this point, having seen the slowdown, the no growth situation of these last couple austerity years?
Well, you know, it goes very deep here, actually. But partly that's founded in the fact that if you go back a few years, you know, we were talking about Germany as the sick man of Europe. And, the German economy was having a lot of problems. And what happened was that they took a lot of these difficult reforms, and so they say, well, if we did it, so can you.
But they did it in a time of prosperity when things were doing pretty well, right?
Well, it wasn't prosperity here. Relatively speaking, here in Germany. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, Germany was going through its bad time while the countries on the periphery were having a party with EU money. I mean,
and they were selling to those parties on the periphery.
You know, this is what you see in on the front page of the mm-hmm. Frankfurter Allgemeine on Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, Spain 60 billion euros between 2000 and 2010. Greece 47.2 billion euros between 2000 and 2010.
What, borrowed or what?
Given by mm-hmm. by the net payers of the EU, like Germany, which sent 80 billion that way, while simultaneously paying to rebuild its own east, while paying to help Poland. And the Germans are just kind of reaching a point where they say they don't want to do this anymore. But I think an important point with regard to what happened with Hollande's election on Sunday is that it was not the conservative Christian Democrats. It was the Social Democrat administration of Gerhard Schröder who actually put through these tough reforms.
Nicholas Kulis, hold the thought if you would. We've got a break right here in Berlin with the New York Times. Scheherazade Rahman in Washington, Dominique Moisey in Paris. Listeners, we're talking about Europe's pushback politics. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big elections on Sunday in Europe, in France, in Greece, and what they mean, the pushback there, the no. No to what? And Europeans saying enough, enough of what exactly? Austerity in the bullseye and a lot of the rhetoric of this campaign and in the streets, certainly, in Greece, and big changes on the way in terms of who's in the seats of power. Dominique Moisy joins us today from Paris. He's at the French Institute of International Affairs there, author of The Geopolitics of Emotion. Shahrazad Rahman joins us from Washington, D.C., and the School of International Affairs at George Washington University. Nicholas Kulisch, Berlin Bureau Chief for The New York Times, is with us from Berlin in Germany, and you can join us as well. What should we, the U.S., learn from what we're watching in Germany? 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Lots of response online here. Tom K. says, congratulations to the French and Greek people for finally waking up and throwing out their Paul Ryans. I'm going to ask you, Shahrazad, if that's indeed what you think they did. But here's another listener who says, to Dominique's perspective, says, the idea that France has pushed back on austerity is ridiculous. Hollande is a devout Euro-federalist whose campaign promises will never materialize. He'll work out some meaningless side agreement on growth with Merkel, and it's empty campaign promises. He says not only that, Hollande plans to accelerate Germany's takeover of Europe, this listener says. In truth, nothing has changed in France at all. Shahrazad, what about first Tom Kaye's notion that the French and Greek are throwing out their Paul Ryans? What do you say to that?
Well, there's an element of truth here, but I think the situation is much more complex. And as I mentioned before, Greece is a very different ballgame than France. I think, in regards to the second caller's issue, look, Hollande has a very tight balancing act. It's vital that he doesn't get the markets to start to bet against France. That's number one. And we're all holding our breath whether he is the game changer that shifts the pendulum from the extreme right of austerity down somewhere towards the middle, where they're doing austerity and focusing on jobs and growth. And these elections have not just exposed the vulnerability of the economic state of the Eurozone, but something much more fundamental. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the coming together and the integration as a whole for the Eurozone and Europe as a world power. This is what's at stake right now.
Whether it will continue to be a world power.
Well, if the fragmentation continues and if France gets lumped into the Spanish and the Italian category, then we've got some trouble ahead. We haven't mentioned Italy, and these are the elections next year that I'm very worried about, because if this anti-incumbent, anti-austerity movement continues, and I believe it will across Europe, the Italian elections are going to cause the markets to be extremely anxious.
Because?
Well, because already we've seen some national elections, some domestic elections in local regions take place yesterday, and the conservatives are pushed out and the socialists came in, and again on the anti-austerity program. And so in Italy, what you're seeing is a build-up towards something similar that happened in France just now. And that occurs, I think that we have some real trouble ahead of us.
What is the danger you're pointing to there? Let's say that occurs, then what?
Well, right now, Italy is facing a pretty serious liquidity crisis, which the European Central Bank is helping by giving it very cheap money. If this liquidity crisis turns into a solvency problem because the markets start to bet against Italy, which they're very close to doing once they lose, Mario Monti as a technocrat leading Italy, then we've got a very serious problem, because Italy simply is too big to save, and that spillover will affect the U.S. in a very big way. We will lose our 2% plus growth if Italy does seriously get hit.
Lawrence in Hartland, Vermont. Thanks for calling, Lawrence. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Right. I think that, first of all, I think that people have understand that Europe is not fracturing. I think Europe is going through processes that are very similar to any sort of, you want to call it, nation building, system building that's going to go on. I think that the restructuring discussions or the austerity discussions, that's one part of it. And I think that the other part of it is a need for stimulus and a need to get the markets going again in certain parts of the continent. And for this, the real restructuring that has to go on is central central institutions that can actually work on a European basis. And this is, I think, the big rejection that's going on. People in France don't like having one person in Germany, that's how they perceive it, Merkel, telling them what to do. The Greeks don't appreciate that either. And this will lead to a fracturing similar to what happened at the beginning of the United States when there was all the discussions about setting up a central currency, a central bank. This goes back to Hamilton and so on and so forth. And until people realize this on a larger scale, I believe that the fracturing is just going to continue, and it's going to continue to remain a difficult European problem. Europe is made up of all these regions, and all of them are responding differently. People are forgetting that England sits off the coast with its own currency and in a similar mess. And they're also going to face some real political problems there, too, because they've just gone the pure austerity route.
Yeah.
So I think that what they have to look for are European solutions, and they have to start at the core, at the banking and monetary institutions that they've set up only partially. They've got a central currency, but they don't have a central bank that can actually do something about it.
This sort of Warren Buffett's observation this week. And Lawrence, thanks for that. Dominique Mosey, what about the European project in the midst of all this? Scheherazade says its global standing is at stake here. You cited Paul Krugman earlier. You know, he's been with us recently and talked with him just last night, saying, you know, Europe may break up over this, may have to break up. That's one answer to the crisis it's in right now, to go back to old currencies, give them the option of devaluing and therefore boosting exports and writing their books. What about it, Dominique? Break up?
I don't think this is an option, but one must be worried. I mean, there is a dimension which we haven't discussed so far, mm-hmm. which is the rise of populist forces all over Europe. I mean, in France, between the extreme right and the extreme left, you have between 30 to 35% of the French that are deeply anti-European, that see Europe as, in fact, the guilty part. So there is that kind of rising populism which you see at work from Hungary to Greece, going through France. And this is the series. This is the most dangerous part. There's no option to move away from Europe, but within the various European countries, there are rising populism based on anger and some people would say despair. There is an element of that.
Nicholas, in Germany, how do people look at that? I mean, look down to Greece. You've got, you know, big wins, something like 5, 6, 7% for a neo-Nazi party there in this vote. You've got gains on the left as well. The big main parties sort of sidelined, unable to put together a government here. How does Germany look at exactly that angry populism, some say extremism, that's being generated in this time of crisis?
You know, I was really shocked on Monday morning to find how small the Greek election was compared to the French election, which I guess is a little understandable, and compared to the election in the northern state of Schleswig-Holstein here mm-hmm. in Germany, mm-hmm. with fewer than 3 million people. And you know, I mean, on the one hand, of course, all politics is local, but on the other hand, if things go too out of whack in Greece, you know, it could threaten the currency that's in the wallets of every single person in this country, plus the project they've mm-hmm. been working on since World War II to integrate the continent. And yet it really was the case. You know, I think that Angela Merkel has, you know, an extremely well-tuned ear for compromise and for politics and for making, you know, the right decision at the right time. But I'm not sure that people are hearing what is happening on the streets of Athens and what's happening on the streets of Madrid, and that's the most frightening thing, because the decisions are being made in a sort of German echo chamber, so to speak.
Yeah, Michael in Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling to speak to your guest Dominique's point earlier in response to fiscal irresponsibility of social spending. I wanted to point out that it was the northern European countries in Europe that have the highest percentage of social spending versus GDP, and that it's not necessarily social programs that have been the cause of problems in Greece and southern Europe. and that he's giving a little bit too much away to the right by saying that they overstretched themselves by trying to do right by the people, and that largely it's an issue with revenue streams dropping off in the recession.
Well, that's a good point, Michael. I mean, it's the North that's seen as the economic sort of bedrock here, but it's the North also, Dominique, with quite strong social welfare programs.
Yes, and I think it's very important for France to take the right lessons from the Nordic model. If you want to say that fairness is the key to accept austerity measures, if you want to say that the state has to be more modest and more honest, and parity between women and men greater, and wealth differences smaller, and the treatment of immigrants more humane, you are right. But the French must realize that this fairness, this social democratic model, is accompanied in most of Scandinavia with sheer economic liberalism, with an emphasis on the role of enterprises in the global economy. So if the answer would lead the French to say, well, more state, that would be clearly a mistake.
Philip in Montreal, Canada. Philip, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes.
Just on Greece, it seems to me that it's going to become another a Balkan basket case like Romania and Bulgaria and may possibly be kicked out of the euro. On the issue of flirting with fascism in Europe, it's interesting that Dominique Moisy mentioned this, the problem of the far right. It's not a big secret to anyone who's followed the French elections that the working class have voted for the extreme right because they don't have jobs, they fear for their future in France, and one of the related problems is immigration. And I'm pretty sure that Mr. Hollande, if he doesn't create jobs, he's going to have a big problem with immigration, which is also a problem in Greece, which is fueling the rise of the far right. And he's going to have a very formidable and charming young woman who could possibly become a president in 2017. Her name is Miss Le Pen.
Marine Le Pen.
Breathing down his back, breathing down his back if he doesn't solve the immigration issue problem for France, which is certainly something that will be on his radar.
Philip, let us pick it up. Scheherazade, what about extremist parties emerging in these elections as a real force? And are callers looking at the right in particular? You got neo-Nazis in Greece. You've got, yes, a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment in France.
You know, this is just about jobs. And this is true on the continent of Europe as it is here. It's just their way about going about it. There's going to be no doubt that the way jobs are going to be created, obviously a little bit of scale back on the austerity coupled with a little bit of stimulus that they have to do in terms of the right areas. But the main ingredient for Europe's job creation is through the private sector, and that simply means labor market reforms. And so the way jobs are going to be created, if they have a more sort of American-style economy where hiring, firing is a lot easier. And this might not be palatable to many Europeans, but if it's that versus a job, I think they'll take the job.
Eric in Madison, Wisconsin. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. What do you think about all this, Eric?
Number one, I'm from Wisconsin. Our recall's coming up, so that'll...
Your governor in a recall fight there, yes. Scott Walker.
Exactly, and I think that'll really set a stage for what's going to happen here. Number two, I think that you need to point out that, you know, the social democracy that they voted in is far different from a social communist party that people in America...
Sure, socialist, but not what we think of as old-time socialists. It's quite true. But so all in all, what are you rooting for over there, Eric?
Well, I think we need some changes. I'm tired of working harder and longer for less. And it's kind of funny. What direction are we really going when you look at what's going on in this country with the Patriot Act, the NSA, the NDDA Act? I mean, where are we really going with our liberties going away?
So what? You're it sounds like you're ready for more liberty and maybe more jobs, or maybe better pay for your job on this side of the Atlantic too, Eric.
Well, you know what? Well, I'd like to know what direction we're going with all our liberties going away and our the Tea Party and this Freedom Act and are we really? What direction are we going?
Eric, thanks for your call. Sherzad, you're there in Washington. I mean, you were saying earlier Europe took stiff medicine early, and that has caused a lot of pain. That has not brought its economies back. The U.S. went into crisis management mode, and maybe that's put us in a little better situation right now. You're saying it's got more medicine to be taken here on the other side of the campaign, but we're not out of the woods here yet either, Sherzad.
Absolutely not. You know, we did the right thing at the beginning, which is crisis management. And as earlier noted, we probably did not enough of it. But where we are behind now is in the real restructuring and the painful stuff, which we probably should have started last year. And then for 2 years, we're going to be at a standstill, given this is a political cycle year. And so we've lost 2 years in the making here, which is, you know, we can ill afford that, given our unemployment rates and the loss of wealth that has occurred over the last 4 or 5 years. So we are behind the eighth ball now.
But if the U.S. starts pulling in its horns further on spending, and Europe is still in a kind of semi, you know, just semi-austerity mode, or maybe more than that, where's the growth come from?
You know, this is very difficult. You know, we are growing. We've been growing since 2009, and we grew quite a bit in 2011. It's slowing down. We know the growth is sustainable between 2 and 3%. The political and social question is it enough to recover jobs? And the answer is no. Is it enough to recover the wealth loss? And the answer is no. So something more has to be done, and we have to restructure. And really, the conversation that we have not had yet is, in 10 years, where should this economy be going? And if we don't have that answer, we can't start just slashing the budget.
Well, lose jobs, lose wealth for enough people, and I guess one clear lesson of Europe is you're going to lose elections, a big debate to be had on that front in this country, looking out at the whole world. Sherzad at George Washington University, thank you so much for being with us, Sherzad.
Thank you.
Sherzad Rahman. Nicholas Kulish, Berlin bureau chief for the New York Times, tweets at nkulish. Nicholas in Berlin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
And Dominique Moisy in France at the French Institute of International Affairs. Monsieur Moisy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.